Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are joined today by a wonderful young man in the sport of dogs who is now a communications coordinator, I believe, at the American Kennel Club. And Bill Ellis, I think, is going to bring us some really fun perspectives from one of the, what I sort of think of as the young Turks in our sport. So welcome, Bill. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thanks for having me.
That's fabulous. So, you know, we talk a lot in the sport about junior handlers, and we're just raising junior handlers to be professional handlers. And one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you is that you are one of the great junior handlers in our sport. Best junior at the Garden under Ann Rogers Clark. I mean, talk about the top of the top. And you didn't become a professional handler. So let's talk a little bit about that and what brought you to where you are today at the American Kennel Club.
Sure. I mean, and I'm still surprised most days that I'm not a professional handler, to be perfectly honest. Still trying to figure out how it didn't happen for me. I did have, you know, a lot of success as a junior handler, and I worked for a few different professional handlers who were really at the top of the sport. And I worked for them largely because my goal was to become a professional handler. And then I came to the realization that, no, it wasn't going to be for me. It wasn't in the cards for me. And I think that was due in large part to professional handling being, I always describe it more of a lifestyle. It's not a job. And as any profession with live animals is, it's 24/7 because there's always the care of the animals, even on a day off. And so that wasn't really what I wanted at the time. And so I decided that I needed to figure out something else for my career path. And so I ended up going to school to become a hairdresser and was a hairdresser for a little over 10 years. And 8 of those years were in New York, in New York City. And then while I was working in New York, it became apparent to me that I needed to go back to college and finish up my undergraduate degree. And so I stayed at the salon working full time the entire time I went back to school. But
good
I went
job.
Back. Thanks. And that was largely because it was just something that bothered me personally. I really wanted to say that I went to college. It wasn't with the intention of having a career change. And so that's how that started. And then as that progressed, I realized that it probably was going to mean a career change for me. And so I finished school and then I was, you know, job hunting. And I was really convinced that I would use my experience doing hair and get a job somewhere in the beauty industry. And then I found a job at the American Kennel Club. And so kind of come full circle.
Absolutely. Totally full circle. So tell us, you started as a junior handler. You were very actively involved in juniors and competitive and working as an apprentice, not just an assistant. So what was your background? Did your family, did you come from dogs? Where did that start?
I did not come from a dog family. I came from a horse family.
Okay.
So both of my parents are still in the horse business. My dad chose hunters and jumpers and judges extensively. My mom did show hunters and jumpers, but her business was thoroughbred horses, and she bred race horses. And so I grew up on a big horse farm, lots of horses. And so we always had dogs, but they were never purebred dogs. They were just the rescue dog from the street that needed a home.
Right.
And we lived about 5 or 10 minutes from the local dog show grounds in Ocala, Florida.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We went to the dog shows every year as spectators. And then there was finally a moment where my mother decided that we really should look into getting a purebred dog and kind of pursue dog showing. And she came at it from a very different place than most people because of her background in horses. You know, horses are bought and sold regularly,
right?
Leased regularly. So the idea that you would start with a puppy and hope that it grows into something was a very foreign concept.
Right.
There was no way that that was happening. So she was of the mindset that we were going to buy good dogs. We weren't going to be breeders from the outset. We weren't going to be raising puppies with our fingers crossed. And so she purchased a few dogs to begin with, and I started out with a PBGV in juniors who was already a champion. He was not a world beater, but he was a great dog to start with, and I was pretty hooked right away.
Very cool. And you were, I'm trying to remember now, you had an English setter that year you won the garden, didn't you?
I did.
Okay.
I started in juniors with a PBGV, and I quickly realized that, you know, PBGVs were not going to be the glamorous junior showmanship dog that I wanted, although I loved them and I had a lot of success in the breed. And so I wanted something that was going to help me be a little more competitive in junior showmanship specifically. And so we had gotten some Labrador Retrievers from a breeder who happened to have a English setter, and he had never been shown, and he said, well, why don't you take the English setter and make it your junior's dog? So I did, and I finished him, and he was sired by Haji, the English setter that was bred by Melissa Newman, and I was like, well, he was a really good dog. And then when it came time to look into getting another English setter, I said, well, I want one of those Setter Ridge dogs.
Right.
And so I called up Melissa Newman and said, you know, hi, I really want one of your dogs. And so that was a dog that I ended up getting when he was about a year old and who I showed in juniors and who I was best junior with at the garden. And he was a pretty young dog at that point. He was maybe a year and a half that year at the garden. And he grew up to be a multiple best in show winner, and he was the number one English setter at one point after juniors at the garden.
Very cool. So you talked a little bit about some of the handlers that you worked for. I know some of them, but talk to us about who were your mentors? Who taught you in dogs? And I guess, what did they teach you? What did you learn? What did you come away with? And not just about dogs.
Well, you know, I had a lot of mentors, but there were three different sets of handlers who I worked for and lived with full time, and I consider them to be my greatest mentors and the people who taught me the most. I worked for Larry Cornelius, and then I worked for Greg and Jay Myers, and then I worked for Laura King. And while I was at Greg and Jane Myers, I also worked with Rindy Gaudette, who worked for them for a lot longer than I did. And she certainly taught me a lot, and we remain best friends. But they all taught me a lot. They certainly taught me that the care of the dogs was first and foremost. And they taught me a lot about work ethic. And we were showing dogs, you know, at the highest level. And that feels really, really glamorous. But it's a lot of work. And so I learned a lot about the strategy that that entails. And when you're showing dogs at the highest level, I think one thing that people seem to forget is that they just think about the dogs that are winning the groups and winning the best in shows. But the people that do it at such a high level, what makes them so good is that the 6 to 9 or the 9 to 12 month old puppy class dog is in the best condition that it can possibly be in. And it's as well as all the other ones. And that is what makes great dog handlers great dog handlers. And that was a lesson that is a thread that runs through all of those people, that every dog is going to be in the best condition that it can possibly be in. I certainly learned a lot about business and
yes,
how they ran their businesses, and a lot about interacting with clients, a lot of people skills. And how to deal with different personalities.
Right. Well, and that's, I think, too often we dog handlers get a knock that we became dog handlers because we're not very good with people. But
it's true.
I mean, that's there. But then you have to do the work. The dogs don't come by themselves with a little backpack on their backs.
They sure don't. And you're dealing with a lot of different kinds of people, a lot of different personalities. And, you know, you're taking someone's pet.
Yes.
And I can't imagine sending my dog off with someone. So that's a hard thing for people to do. And, you know, you've got to have some real people skill there. Some people have more people skill than others, but it's got to be there.
Right. And so your takeaway, what you brought to your work, your college, your now to the American Kennel Club is, it sounds like to me, it sounds that work ethic. That is what had you working full time and going to school. And I think that that's something that we really need to focus on in this sport, that dogs for kids isn't just about showing the dog.
No, there's a lot to it. And one thing that I learned from them, which is just a really great life lesson, and not just from them, but from most of my experience in dogs, is that whatever it is that you are doing, do it to the best of your ability. And that is something that really helped me when I went back to school. I went back to school a little later in life at a non-traditional college age. And that's a pretty humbling experience when you look around and you're one of the oldest people in the classrooms. And I was like, well, I'm in the first semester back at college, and all I can do is do it to the very best of my ability and take it one step at a time. And that's a lesson that I learned from all those people.
And that's great. And that will carry you forward. I think that's one of the things that I preach all the time to the assistants. You may or may not turn out to be the next second coming of all that's holy in dog shows, but you're going to learn how to get up on time and that other things are more important than you and all of those things.
Yeah, those are all lessons that just come with dogs, come with caring for animals, come with the lifestyle of traveling to and from dog shows. You know, there's a lot that goes into it before you get to run around and be famous.
That's right. So winning Best Junior under Ann Rogers Clark, let's talk about that. Annie Clark was not always the hugest fan of sort of the junior-y junior, if that makes sense.
She definitely was not.
And so I thought that was a really, I was there. I happened to be there watching as I had a young gal showing one of my dogs, Megan Hoff. And I remember watching, and all of those young people that day, to me, just put on the most amazing performances. I can get goosebumps just thinking about it. How did it feel to you to be in that ring showing to, as Megan put it, I'm showing to God?
I certainly felt the same way Megan did. I felt like I was showing to God. I was remarkably calm. I think it was fortunate that I had the dog that I had because I was forced to give him a bath and blow him out beforehand. And so I had something to occupy my time. I had a task that had to be done for an hour and 15 minutes before we started. And I think that was really helpful in that moment just for me, because I would have probably been a nervous wreck if I hadn't had something to do. And that dog specifically, he was a really great show dog, but he was a spook. And he was always that way. And if a judge came up to him and talked to him at all, wanted to pet him while they were going over his head or looking in his mouth, he hated it. And he would lay down and not stand up and lose his mind. If a judge came up and went over him very matter-of-factly, even if they were a little rough with him, he was fine. And so I remember thinking, like, oh, Mrs. Clark doesn't get much more matter-of-fact than that.
That was a blessing.
It was a blessing. And I thought, you know, there's a chance that this dog is going to be intimidated by his surroundings, but I think he'll stand up for her fine, because she's going to come up and just go over him and be normal about it and not try to coddle him or
no goo-gooing
things in his face. So I was really calm about it all. And It was a really great night. I remember being really nervous the day before in the preliminaries. I was much, much, much more nervous in that setting than I was the next night. I think it just, maybe the occasion was too much for me to take in.
Yeah, it's pretty overwhelming. So there's going to be kids listening to you right now that are going to want to know, so what do you do? How do you prepare for that? What gets you there? All of those kinds of questions. Reach out to our junior handlers that are ramping up right now, trying to get enough wins to go do what you did.
Well, I certainly had fun the entire time I was doing it. Whether I was really nervous the day before or really calm the day of the finals, I remember enjoying all of it. It's very enjoyable when you get to be the winner. I mean, there's no getting around that.
But true enough.
The whole experience was really fun. I knew most of the kids that had made the finals with me. And so I think that first and foremost, it's so important to enjoy the moment and have a really good time with your dog. That will show on every level when you're having a really good time, especially in an environment like the Garden or another big show like the National Championship or even your National Specialty. You're never going to get a bigger audience than that watching junior showmanship. I still go every year at the Garden and watch as much as I can of the prelims, and I watch the finals. I don't watch junior showmanship at every other dog show I go to, but I watch there, so enjoy it. And then I think it's really important to remember that it's still all about your dog, and you have to put them first. And if it's worked before, it's probably going to work again. And it's not the time to start to try something new and fancy that you're excited about or that you've seen someone else do. So I would stick with what you know and make it all about your dog.
That was the advice from a lot of top professionals too. So
yeah. Because it's easy to be in the moment and be like, oh, I want to do something different. I want to change my dog's leash. I want to try and show a dog differently. And, you know, it's not really the time to experiment.
Right.
That's what you've got all those other dog shows for, to figure it out.
Right. And that the connections that you made working for handlers, all of those things, those are now coming into play in your new role with the American Kennel Club, I would assume.
Definitely. I mean, two of the three handlers that I lived with and worked for all are field reps. So we all are now employees of the American Kennel Club. And Laura's still the weekend warrior showing those dogs.
She's my hero.
She is my hero. She's a pretty awesome person.
Yeah, she is.
But Larry and Jane are field reps now. And then I work here in the office in New York. It's still a relatively new position for me. I've been there just about 2 months now.
Excellent.
So it's been really
excellent.
Fun.
And you're enjoying that? It's a whole new new view on
amazing.
The sport.
It is a whole new view. It's a really great view. I wish that everyone in the sport had the opportunity to know all the things that the American Kennel Club does. I don't even know all of the things that the American Kennel Club does. I've only been there 8 weeks. But my eyes have been open to all sorts of different amazing things that the Kennel Club does for purebred dogs. And it's pretty awesome.
Well, you're the communications coordinator, so give us a for example.
Yeah, so I'm the communications coordinator. So I am essentially the support system for the communications or the public relations team. So there are five of us on the communications public relations team, and then we have two multimedia specialists who do amazing videos and photographs and images for us, and they do all sorts of things that are completely beyond my capabilities, and the two of them are so talented. So the communications team does things on lots of different levels, which we could spend a whole other podcast talking
right?
about.
Give us an example. I mean, I think that really it's important that people in the sport know exactly what the American Kennel Club does. I mean, I think there is some misunderstanding out there that this is a great opportunity to clear that up.
I think so, too. So, you know, we do things on a big national stage. So we do a lot of work with the national championship, with arranging the media around that and promoting that event, and It is the AKC's dog show. We do a lot of that similar work in February when we do Meet the Breed here in New York on Westminster weekend, where we're working with press to really help get information into the media so that we can get as many people to understand how great purebred dogs are and what an awesome thing the sport of purebred dogs is and how many different amazing events there are to do with your dog. And then not on such a big scale, we do a lot of work with local clubs. So we have a club communications manager, and she works so hard with local clubs for really whatever it is. Clubs need different things, so it's up to the clubs as to what their needs are. And some clubs are great at doing their own public relations and their own communications, and they don't need very much help. And some clubs do want a lot of help, and we are there to help support them and help them write press releases, media alerts, anything we can to help publicize their event and get coverage for them and their kennel club.
And that's great. And I think that's a resource that clubs need to really take more advantage of, because I think we talked in today's podcast about clubs and what they can do to reach out. And one of the things that we talked about is needing to have more contact with the public. And this is the this is the sort of thing that I think the clubs need to take advantage of what's available to them.
I agree. And it's important for them to know that we are here to help. You know, I was able to send someone who's hosting an RDO day event coming up, a responsible dog ownership day. They needed some supporting materials for their event, and they're up against the deadline. And I was happy to send them some examples so that they can, you know, move forward and have a really successful event. And it is something we're happy to help do.
And that's good. And I think we will definitely include links on our website that will take people to the communications department directly, so that if they have questions for their club, ways that they can reach out and target education in the community and the public outreach, that they have a place to go.
Yes, we are Excellent. Here to help.
Excellent. Okay, so in closing, and I ask this of everyone, as you know, you're one of sort of the younger generation, I guess, below me and ahead of the junior handlers. I mean, you know, you're in the middle there. What are some ideas? What are some suggestions? What can we as members of this fancy do to get more young people involved?
Well, I think first and foremost, we always have to remember to be kind.
Yes.
Sometimes that can get a little bit lost whenever you're doing something that is competitive. And so it's important to be kind and supportive. The AKC Registered Handlers Program does a lot of different seminars for juniors, which is awesome. They're always well attended, and it's a great opportunity for junior handlers to learn from successful professionals. So I always encourage clubs to have seminars and events for juniors. It doesn't have to be a handling seminar. There's so many different things that people in the sport can talk to junior handlers about. You can talk to them about breeding. You can talk to them about the history of dog shows, or it can be more hands-on like a handling seminar. And I think it's really important for breeders, handlers, owners to be available to juniors. So when we're at the dog shows and there are juniors that are showing the breed that you have, offer them support, offer them help and advice, and be there for them.
Absolutely. And they may not take it. I hear people say all the time, well, I tried and they didn't want it. I was like, well, okay, so you tried, right?
So you tried. I think that's all we can do, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't think a junior handler should take all the advice that's given to them. Because they probably do get a lot. They certainly are going to get more unsolicited advice than you or I am at a dog show. But I think that making ourselves available to them and encouraging them to ask questions and watch and including them will foster longer relationships. relationships for them in the sport of purebred dogs.
Yeah, I like the definitely including them. You know, if you have a junior handler that's showing one of your dogs, talk to them about, you know, why is this a good dog? Why isn't a good dog? You know, that sort of thing. So they start thinking in that way.
Yeah. And the expectation shouldn't be that they're all going to grow up to be the next amazing professional handler.
No.
But that doesn't change the way we should approach it and the way we should encourage them.
And I think that not just handlers, but we have breeders. We have people who work in the pet industry, people who work for the American Kennel Club. There are a lot of professions, as you are a great example, that don't mean you win best junior at the garden and you go on to be a top professional handler. There's stuff that you learn that is carried forward into everything you do in life.
It's true. And I remember thinking, and I think a lot of successful junior handlers who are really passionate about dogs and showing dogs probably feel this way at some point, where it's just you are living it and breathing it and it's all you want to do and it's all or nothing. You want to go to 150 dog shows a year or you're just going to die. And
yep.
It took me a long time to realize that it doesn't have to be all or nothing, that there's a lot of different ways to incorporate the sport into your life and be involved in different ways.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and best of luck in your new position. I expect to see great things from you with the American Kennel Club. You bring a lot of knowledge to the spot.
Oh, thanks, Laura. This was fun. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.